Welcome to the Plant Grow Reap podcast.
Welcome to Plant Grow Reap. Unusual for you to see us in the podcast studio together. Today I have the wonderful Shane McKenna on the opposite side of the table. I say wonderful because you need to answer all the questions today. Today we are here to talk about superannuation. We're specifically talking about a new tax that is coming into effect in Australia that has not been legislated yet. So I think we need to preface this conversation with the fact that this is general advice only and that we don't actually have very firm legislation that has been agreed to by the Parliament yet. So things could change between now and whatever may happen once this eventually goes through Parliament. So please, if you are in a situation where you think you may be impacted by this new tax that Shane's about to talk to us about, then you need to seek specific professional advice from your advisor. That can be us if you are a client of Aintree Groups. Even if you are not a client of Aintree Groups, if something here piques your interest or your advisor isn't talking to you about this sort of stuff, then please feel free to give us a call and as usual, we'll have all the details. But Shane, talk to us a bit about there's all these wordy accounting-y things that you're about to say. Tell us about what we need to know.
Okay, so what we're talking about here is Division 296, which is a new tax that's going to be imposed, supposedly, from the 1st of July 2025. So this podcast is recorded on the 1st of July. It may not come out on the 1st of July.
No, it won't.
But today is the effective date of it if it passes both houses of Parliament. It's been through the lower house. It's got to go through the upper house or the Senate and then get royal assent. So as Andrea said, it's just draft legislation or proposed legislation, and so there could be some changes, but let's base it on the fact that we don't believe there will be any changes, and what I'm about to talk about is how it's going to operate. So the key thing with this Division 296 is it is a new tax and it is completely separate to any other taxes that are imposed on superannuation funds, and it is a potential up to additional 15% tax on the earnings, and this is an important point, earnings within the fund. Now, there's been a lot of press on this over a little while, and I think every day in my news feeds and everything I'm getting press on it. There's a lot of hysteria about it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of misinformation about it, even from newspapers and otherwise. And what I'm going to try and do today in this short period of time is demystify some of the things about it and give you a better understanding about how it actually works. So where we'll start with is that this is, as I said, separate to normal income tax on a superannuation fund. So this Division 296 tax has no interaction with normal income tax within a fund. So if you pay tax at Division 296 stage, you cannot then get a credit for that against your income tax within the fund and vice versa. They're completely separate. So where this legislation, proposed legislation comes in, which is controversial, is it deals with what they call earnings within the fund and the growth in the earnings on the fund. So I'd try and give you a very simple example without trying to get into all the technicalities, because there is some elements to it which are quite complicated. And I should preface this by saying this applies to members of a superannuation fund, whether it's a self-managed fund, whether it's an industry fund, a retail fund, it applies to all superannuation funds. It's on a per member basis. And if your member balance is greater than $3 million, at the end of the financial year, so even though I said that this legislation is proposed to start from 1 July, it's about what your member balance is within your superannuation fund, and not just one super fund but all your funds. So if you've got more than one fund, the combined or what we call the total superannuation balance or the TSB, if that balance at 30 June 2026 is $3 million or more, then you are caught under this new Division 296. And what it does, it taxes the growth or the increase in the fund balance between 1 July 25 and 30 June 26 for this current financial year. So I'll give you a very quick example, and I'm going to go into all the ins and outs because there's so many different elements to it. But let's say it's a very simple fund. It has an opening balance of $3 million. It goes up in balance to $4.5 million. Now, I'm exaggerating that just because it makes it easier for me to work out the numbers off the top of my head. So let's say there's been no contributions made into the fund, so no concessional or non-concessional contribution to the fund, and there's been no withdrawals out of the fund, rollovers out or pension payments or anything like that. So it's purely been an increase in the value of the assets within the fund and the earnings within the fund. So in that scenario, we have got from $3 million to $4.5, we have a $1.5 million increase in the value of the fund for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that increase in value is what is subject to this Division 296 tax. So what we have to do is we have to look at that balance, which is $1.5 million. We then have to take that as a percentage of your total balance, which was the $4.5. So, and then we work out that as a percentage. So that percentage works out to 1/3.
Mm-hmm.
So, and make sure my maths is correct. Yeah, I think it is.
We will provide some form of written version of this so that people can understand it when they get, because there are a lot of numbers and there's a lot of complexity. This is the reason why I said do not try and do this at home. This is one of those things where you cannot sit at home and try and work this out on the back of an envelope.
No, you can't. No, you can't. So in this scenario, so back to this scenario, so we've got an increase of $1.5 million over a total super balance at the end of the year of $4.5. So that's 1/3 increase in the fund.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we then apply that 1/3 to the increase in value of the fund, which is 1.5,
mm-hmm.
which reduces that down to 500,000.
Uh-huh.
It is that 500,000 that is taxed at this 15% tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the whole fund.
Yep.
It's just the percentage of the fund over $3 million
mm-hmm.
as a percentage of your total superannuation balance.
Yep.
So all this hysteria, oh, look, my fund's gone from $3 million to $4.5 million. I'm going to pay 15% tax on the $4.5 million balance.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely wrong. So it's only on the percentage of the fund that is above that threshold as a percentage of the total fund balance. So, yes, that might be confusing. Probably people are going around and saying, oh, my God,
exactly.
How does that work? But what that means in effect in that scenario is only 1/3 of that growth is taxed. So it means $500,000 at 15% is $75,000. So, yes, that is a lot of tax to pay still on growth.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that could be just an unrealized growth on an asset such as a property.
Yep.
So the property might have gone from X value up to Y value.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't sold that property or realized that benefit because it's purely a valuation change, but you still have to pay tax on that.
Mm-hmm.
Then that tax, then the issue is, okay, who pays the tax? So under Division 296, that tax is actually assessed to the individual member in their personal name, so not within the superannuation fund.
Right.
To the individual themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can make a nomination to then have the superannuation fund pay that on your behalf, but you have to actually get the assessment first from the ATO when that is issued, and then you have to follow steps to actually make a nomination so that then your fund will pay that on your behalf.
Right.
So there's two fundamental issues with the way this tax works mm-hmm. that is causing controversy. The first one is that we are taxing unrealized gains.
Yep.
So if an asset goes from X value up to Y value,
mm-hmm.
we're going to be paying tax under this new Division 296 on that gain, even though it's just what we call a paper profit. It's not actually realized, where normally it's only realized gains you pay.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good policy? I personally don't think it's a good policy that you're taxing unrealized gains. There's been a lot of talk about the fact that this is the start of then they might then mm-hmm. roll this out to other areas. I'm not sure they'll do that, but that's a fundamental issue that I have with this legislation. The other part of it is that because it's on unrealized gains, you've got to make sure you've got liquidity to be able to pay the tax.
Mm-hmm.
So either in your personal name or in the superannuation fund.
Yep.
So it then can potentially change the investment strategy that you have within your fund to ensure there's enough liquidity within the fund
mm-hmm.
to be able to meet this tax, but not only meet this tax, but then if you're in pension phase, be able to meet any pension withdrawals you need to make, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to put a bit of pressure on those funds, particularly that are asset rich and cash poor,
mm-hmm.
where they've got a lot of their eggs into property baskets or things where it's not liquid assets.
Yep.
It may have to reframe their investment strategies.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side though, it only impacts at the moment supposedly 80,000 taxpayers within Australia.
Yep.
Because based on the $3 million threshold, there's supposedly only 80,000 individuals that have superannuation balances greater than $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a big pool.
Yep.
So I don't think it's going to impact all these other doom and gloom things about, you know, it's going to cause property issues because people are going to be divesting of properties and all those sort of things. But overall, it's never going to be that 30% tax rate that they're talking about and
mm-hmm.
most likely never going to be unless you've got a really super mega balance, 100 million plus, it's never going to be near that even the 15% extra tax
mm-hmm.
you're paying.
Because mm-hmm.
you'll pay the tax you normally do on the income tax side.
Yep.
And this one, as a percentage of the balance above 3 million, it will never be, except in exceptional circumstances, at that 15% rate, it'll be around the 5 to 10% mark in general, maybe even lower.
Yep. When people are talking to you about this, what is the biggest misconception?
Two things. One is they think it's not per member. They think it's just on the total the super fund. Balance of the fund. So if you've got two members, they think, oh, look, if we've got it's combined value million. Over 3 mil, then we're in trouble. So that's the first thing. And the second thing, they just think it's a 30% tax rate. Or even a 15% tax
rate. And that's pretty easy to think, isn't it? Because the media have been talking about it just being a 30% tax on super funds. And it's not until and we've probably seen people who are reasonably clued up about superannuation get this wrong as well, because you do need to read into it and understand what the equation is. And we had a conversation about the equation the other night, because equations are not my thing, but they are one of our kids' things. And he was trying to make it look like an equation so that it was easy to understand too, but it is not easy to understand.
No,
I think that's
not.
What people really need to go away with, is that it is not something that you can just go, oh, this is going to impact me in this way, because you need to sit down, and you've had conversations with individual clients, right, that have thought that it was pretty doom and gloom, and they've come out of that meeting with you and said, oh, I don't really need to change much, do I?
Correct. And give you an absolute example from last night. I met with a client yesterday afternoon, and they've got a superannuation balance around the $9 million mark in their personal member account. So it's a substantial balance. And he said, so I'm now going to pay 30% tax in my super fund. And I went through it with him, and I said, look, let's look at the income tax side of things first. Now, he's invested in property plus a lot of listed shares. His effective tax rate on his superannuation fund for last year, ignoring this new tax, was 0%. That's because all the tax that he had to pay in the fund was offset by franking credits on listed shares. So he actually got a refund for the year. So his effective tax rate to start with, before we even look at Division 296, was zero. So then we did an exercise. I've got a spreadsheet, and I did an exercise, said, look, let's hypothetically say your superannuation fund went up by $1 million in the next 12 months and then you're caught under Division 296. We then worked that out, and his tax on that would be $75,000. So when you look at the effective tax rate for him overall, because of the way he was, his investments were structured, it worked out to an effective tax rate overall of about 6%. On his total $9 million super balance and the earnings on that super balance. So this notion of 15% or even 30%, other way around, I should say, 30% or 15%, it is not the case across the board.
And I think that it's wise to point out as well that this only, according to statistics, and this is the info that's been given to us by the ATO and various other government agencies, it does only impact on 80,000 people at the moment.
At
now,
the
that's
moment.
Not to say that that's not going to improve. I mean, you know, superannuation balances go up and down like a yo-yo, so it's not, that's not always going to be the case, but 80,000 people in a population of 27-ish million,
correct?
It's not going to impact on a lot of people. So it's, there's a lot of talk going on for something that's going to impact on a pretty small number of the population.
Absolutely. And look, there's no doubt, because the other, one of the key elements of this proposal is that it's not going to be indexed. So no doubt it's going to capture more people down the track. And that's just a given. So that's an issue with it as well, because there's no indexation. But again, I read an article, and you know, some of this hysteria. They did an article where they said, okay, if you're 22 and you're earning the average Australian wage, which is $80,000 or something like that, and getting your 12% superannuation, then in 40 years' time, you'll exceed that $3 million threshold. Absolutely, that might be the case. What is the chances this legislation will still be as it is? With an index, with a non-indexed balance of $3 million in 40 years' time. Completely, I'd put it on the 0.01% chance. Now, I could be wrong with that, and I'm probably not going to be around to know whether that's the case or not.
40 years? But, maybe.
But I think we've just got to take things with a grain of salt. So back to this client example last night when I spoke to him about it, he said, so what you're telling me, Shane, is I should do nothing. And I said, most likely, I said, look, I can't give you investment advice, because you're saying, should I transfer assets out and do all these things? Now, he can, because he's met the age of retirement. But I said, based on what I've just showed you, I don't think there is anything that you should do to try and avoid this tax, because what are the alternatives? So the alternative, and this is where the scenarios are that we can talk about in terms of strategies. And some of the alternatives are, you withdraw money out of superannuation
mm-hmm.
and you invest it in another form.
Yep.
So, yes, you could do that. What are the consequences of doing that? So if you withdraw, so you've got to have cash to withdraw it or mm-hmm. you transfer an asset out of the fund.
Yep.
So if you
which presumably you can't do if you're not the
so
right age.
You've got to meet the you certain age. So yep. there's certain mm-hmm. criteria, generally age 60 plus, but this yep. is general in nature, so I don't mm-hmm. want to give any yeah, further yeah, yeah. detail because it depends on your circumstances.
But I can't just go yank money out of my super fund at the moment without a huge issue.
But if you can,
yep.
and let's say you want to transfer an asset out, you don't want to sell mm-hmm. it because I've got this great property, I don't want to sell it, mm-hmm. so I'm going to transfer it out of my super fund. Well, potentially you've got capital gains tax
mm-hmm.
on the transfer because it's got to be put at market value.
Yep.
And you might have bought it a long time ago and there's an unrealized capital gain on it. And two, you've also got potentially stamp duty on that mm-hmm. asset to transfer yep. it out. So potentially. Now, yep. certain jurisdictions around Australia you might be able to get it out stamp duty free, but that's only if it goes into your personal name.
Mm.
Then if that property goes into your personal name, then all the rental income and everything you're getting on that property will yep. then become taxable in your personal name.
Yep. Yep.
So back to this client scenario where his effective tax rate is 6%.
Yep.
Is he going to get that tax rate anywhere else?
Yeah.
In a trust, in a company, in a in individual name? The answer is no.
Yep.
So you've just got to look at your personal circumstance and work out what the mix of assets you've got is,
mm-hmm.
what the consequences are if you wanted to pull money out
yep.
and put it in another vehicle, or whether you just have to say, look, yes, it's a new tax. Yes, we don't like it.
Mm.
Yes, it's the basis on it, taxing unrealized gains is unreasonable. But the best option is to leave it within the superannuation environment because that's going to give me the best tax outcome. Now, yep. obviously everything's not just for tax purposes.
Mm.
There might be estate planning or succession planning things you want to take into consideration.
Yep.
But purely on a tax basis, in most scenarios it makes no sense to look at doing anything bar leaving those assets within superannuation. Maybe you can make a decision about when you pull money out under pension or otherwise how you invest those monies down the track.
Yep.
But I don't think at this point, and let's see what the legislation looks like.
Mm.
Let's also get past the first 12 months on it and see yep. how it actually works in real life.
Yep.
Let's be patient. And yes, it might mean a little bit more tax, but let's just let it all play out and then see how it impacts us directly.
Yep. And I think the main point about that is that even if you do have a balance over $3 million, you should not be having conversations around the pub saying, what are my mates doing with it and all of that sort of stuff, because everybody's circumstances are different.
Absolutely.
There isn't a single super fund that has the same combination of investments, et cetera. There's all sorts of different things that are going to impact on people's decisions here. And, you know, what you and I generally talk about from a values perspective is that you don't do things just to save tax anyway. There's always a broader strategy, and you've got to sit down with your advisors and talk to them about what is the best thing for you under the circumstances.
Correct.
And I think this one is one where there's been a lot of talk, and there's still a lot of talk. I mean, it's the 1st of July today and everybody is now talking about this new tax, and, you know, prime ministers from past are getting involved in the conversations.
They are, front page of the Australian newspaper today.
It was the first thing that I read this morning where, Paul Keating stands up and says it's the most terrible thing to ever happen and yada, yada, yada. And look, there are, you know, when the GST came out, people were saying exactly the same thing about that it was awful and it was going to be a disaster and all of that. So in the end, you've got to wait and see how it impacts on your personal situation.
Absolutely.
A question though, you said about liquidity, because obviously if you've got this tax that you have to pay now and you have to pay it in your personal name, but you can structure it so that that's not the case. What, and there's no legislation, so I'm asking you a question that is based on completely hypotheticals. What do I do if I've got a big tax debt like that and I now have to try and come up with the cash?
That's right. Well, you've got to come up with the cash.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got to, that's why I said before, you've got to look at your investment strategy
mm-hmm.
and you might have to change the mix of your assets to not be all into illiquid assets such as property, which takes time to dispose of to be able to free up that cash.
Yeah.
Whether this is inside or outside of superannuation.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to look at more liquid assets like shares and other things that can be sold on the market pretty quickly or cash management accounts, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So it might also impact your return on investment because you've got to make sure that liquidity is there.
Yep.
If you're in a situation where you don't have the cash to pay it, then you can obviously negotiate with the ATO to do a payment plan, but hey, the rule on that changed today
as
well.
Exactly.
So up until today, in general, and again, I'm going to talk general here, if you had a tax debt, then you could claim a tax deduction for the interest that mm-hmm. you incurred on that tax debt if you did a payment plan with the ATO and the ATO was charging you interest. From 1 July 2025, yeah. that no longer applies. So any interest you incur with ATO debt now is yep. non-tax deductible.
Yeah. So if you've got a super fund that is going to be impacted on this, don't wait until the 28th of June 2026 to have a conversation with your advisor about what you should do, because that will be too late. You need to be talking to your advisor along the way and making sure that throughout the next 12 months you're keeping up with what needs to happen to make sure that you're compliant with these sorts Correct. Of things, because you definitely don't want a tax bill slapped at you at the end of this period
No.
that you could have avoided by making, you know, good decisions along the way.
Yeah, and a couple of things with that. One of the fundamental challenges with this legislation is about valuations
mm-hmm.
because unrealized gains are Yep. part of the mix
Yep.
and particularly property.
Mm.
And the requirements now with superannuation funds, and look, I'm talking mainly about self-managed super funds because that's yeah. the space that we yeah. deal in, where a lot of our clients have properties as part of their investment portfolio.
Yep.
It's required now to get valuations on those assets every year.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly now for Division 296, if it comes in
yep.
as it is, then those valuations become critical because it dictates what Division 296 tax you will pay
yep.
based on the movement in the value of that asset.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to make sure that those valuations are robust,
yep.
but they're also not, there's not, you're not chopping and changing between different methodologies or otherwise, which can have dramatic ups and downs in those valuations from one year to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way the legislation works is that if you have an increase in value for Division 296 purposes and you pay tax on that, then if there's a correction in that value or that value of that asset drops, then you get a credit as a carried forward loss on the Division 296, but you don't get a tax credit for it. So you don't get a refund of that tax you'd paid previously. So then if you have a situation where you might have a property that's worth $5 million,
mm-hmm.
goes up to $6 million, you pay tax on that difference under this new rule.
Yeah.
Then next year we have a valuation that goes back to $5 million. You've paid tax on that unrealized gain. Then if you, for whatever reason, have to sell that property or there's a death in the family and it requires liquidation of that asset,
yeah.
for whatever reason, then you would not get a credit for that tax you've paid on that unrealized gain of $1 million. It went from $5 to $6 million, even though you've sold it for $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a new tax that you've paid
yep.
on a gain that never actually eventuated.
Yeah.
And that's because yep. of the valuation fluctuations.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some anomalies with the legislation which catch things like that,
yep.
catches things like that, which we need to be conscious of. But that's also why it's very important that you follow the valuation processes and make sure you've got robust valuations each year to ensure
yep.
that you're not having those wild fluctuations. But look, if the market booms or for whatever mm-hmm. reason, then there will be increase in values that you have to take into consideration. If you look at the
yep.
lifespan of property, I think I just read yesterday in Victoria that average house prices dropped in the 2025 financial year.
Yeah. Yep.
So what that might mean when we're getting valuations on super fund assets at 30 June 2025, so yesterday in this for this time date, then they're going to be lower than maybe what they otherwise would be.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have an increase in the value, then we're going to have a situation where we're going to have a lot of people who are paying Division 296 tax if they've got member balances over $3 yep. million at year end on those properties because they've grown in value.
Yep, yep. The valuation thing is probably something that we can cover off on here because it's going to be a bit of a change for some people because people would have in the past been able to just get a simple valuation from their real estate agent, for instance, to say this is what the value of the property is. What's your recommendation for this going forward?
Yeah, so the requirements are, and the ATO has been very strict on this in the last mostly 12 months, they've mm-hmm. really enforced this, is that you need to have a valuation done on the property each year. That's the first part.
Yeah.
What they've said is that you can have a valuation done independently
mm-hmm.
every 3 years.
Yep.
In the 2 years in between, you can do your own assessment of the valuation. However, you need to still have a reasonable basis on which you come up with that valuation. That requires doing comparable sales analysis for properties in your area, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It requires a lot of effort.
Yep.
So our recommendation, but we're conscious that this costs a fee and it's going to be an additional cost mm-hmm. for superannuation funds going forward,
yep.
is that you get an independent valuation each year and wherever possible you try and use the same valuer each year so you've got consistency in methodology because you go to three different valuers, you're potentially going to get three different values.
Mm-hmm.
And so yep. using the same value with the same philosophy is a positive thing because it will get consistency in terms of their approach and their assessment of it.
Yep.
That's not to say that there's going to be valuation fluctuations,
mm.
But my recommendation is if unless you've got the skill set to be able to spend the time and effort to do your own comparable sales, et cetera, that you engage an independent valuer to do that work for you.
Yeah. What does a property valuation generally cost? Going to put you on the spot here.
Oh, it really ranges.
If it's a residential property,
if it's residential is fairly straightforward. You can generally use some off the shelf providers, which it's only potentially only $25 to get that valuation through. Yeah. So someone like CoreLogic as an example, and we use them for our residential properties. It does get a bit tricky if you've got apartments.
Yep.
Because it makes it just harder for them to work out the true value of those because of multi-story complexes and whatever the case may be. Yep. For industrial and commercial property, you can pay anywhere between, $1,000 and $3,000 depending on the size of the property and the complexity of the nature of the property.
Yep.
So it can be a large impost per year. It could even be higher than that. Mm-hmm. My experience with who we used in the past has been around that range, depending on the complexity or, the size of the property, et cetera, et cetera. We are in negotiations and discussing with a provider where we can get a flat fee for this, which is at a much lower rate through bulk or through volume, to get it at a much lower rate than that. But we're still, we'll come back, we'll let everyone know what that price looks like.
Yep.
But that's what we're looking at doing. And look, this is a real opportunity for valuers to be able to scale up in terms of because of the need for these valuations within superannuation.
Not being able to answer people's, we've got to be general in nature here. So I'm not going to ask you a specific question, but out of all of the people that you've spoken to, is there anybody that you've spoken to who you've actually said to them, this is going to be a real problem for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Those clients with large super balances. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking between 3 and 10 million.
Yeah.
We're talking balances above that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And particularly if they're heavily weighted with their investments in property, that's particularly the case where they'll be impacted.
Yeah. Fortunately, I think we've worked out that the ones that are well above the $3 million cap, there's not a lot of those people out there. So it's not like your average person walking down the street is going to be impacted in that way. What would you suggest that people do right now, given that it's the 1st of July, and what time frame would you be suggesting to them that they start to have conversations with people, look at valuations, look at all of the implications?
Yeah, well, certainly from a valuation perspective, that should be a conversation had fairly soon to get those valuations locked away. And then we know what our starting point is. Mm-hmm. So one of the key things of this is actually knowing what our starting point is, particularly those people who've got superannuation funds where they're on the cusp of that $3 million threshold.
Yeah.
Now, I know, again, I said it before, it's at the end of the financial year, which is a key date, but even, we've got to use some sort of basis. Yep. So if they're close to that $3 million threshold now or they've got a history where their fund has been growing, then getting those, striking that balance of what the super fund balance is at 30 June 25 is critical for us to know what sort of planning we need to look at, if any, because there is an absolute benefit if we can get their balance below $3 million at the end of the financial year.
Yep.
Because then they're out of the system, irrespective of what their circumstances are along the way. If we can get them balanced below $3 million at year end, then Division 296 does not apply.
Yep.
So some of the things that we've looked at in terms of strategies for that, if I'm probably digressing from your question but what we're looking at, particularly with the those in their retirement phase, is looking at whether we look at transferring wealth to the next generation or transfer wealth out to not the next generation, but the one after.
Yep.
So conversation I've been having with clients recently and one or two that we've been putting processes in place at the moment, and again, good to give client examples without mentioning the clients. Mm-hmm. Got a client who's got a balance at 30 June 24 because we haven't done 25 yet, that was about $3.6 million.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to this client, elderly client in their 80s, talked about, right, is it time to look at transfer wealth because what's in her superannuation balance is beyond her needs for the rest of her life.
Yep.
So we've got a strategy we're putting in place where it's withdrawing the balance or benefits out of her superannuation account and then she's gifting that money to her children and then they're contributing back into their own superannuation account.
Yep.
And what that's doing, that's reducing her balance and then it's giving that money to her children for them to do what they want with it from an investment point of view.
Yep.
And that's one way where we can, by those withdrawals coming out, that's reducing her member balance. And in this scenario, her member balance will be below the $3 million threshold at 30 June.
Yep.
And most likely, based on our modelling, it'll be below 30 June at June. So it'll be below, 3 million mm-hmm. at 30 June 2026 as yep. well. Mm-hmm. So then she'll be out of the system. Whereas if we did nothing,
yep.
she'll be in the system and then, again, subject to the capital growth on the assets and what that tax might look like.
Yep. So you just talked about transfer of wealth as being one strategy. Are there any other strategies?
Look, another one which is like transfer of wealth, but it's really just looking at husband and wife or partners and looking at their member balances. So you might have a situation where one member has got a balance of 3.5 million
mm-hmm.
and the other member has a balance of 1 million or something less.
Yep.
So one of the strategies that you can look at, if possible, and it all comes down to conditions of release and whether you can take money out and put it back in or whatever the case may be with mm-hmm. a super fund, but looking at trying to equalise the balances between spouses.
Okay.
So that, because as I said, it's a $3 million threshold per member.
Mm-hmm.
So if one's above and one's below, yep. what can we do to reduce one and to build one up and mm-hmm. maybe keep them both under the $3 million or at least get them more equalised so we're not having a bigger impact on one
yep.
versus another.
Is it possible to do those things as you go or is it just going to be down to who earns what? And
No, we can do it as you go. Mm-hmm. So it's an ongoing strategy.
Yep. If you've got a self-managed fund, I assume.
Self-managed fund, yeah, yes. Okay. But also you can do it with a retail fund or an industry fund provided mm-hmm. you've got the condition of release. So it comes down okay. to whether you meet the condition of release where mm-hmm. you're 60 or over
yep.
and meet the criteria,
mm-hmm.
but there's ways in which you can withdraw out of one member balance and put it back into the other.
Right.
It also can have some benefits where you're withdrawing from one and putting back into the other for what's called the death tax, which is another session, which we won't talk
about today.
Which is to do with on the passing of husband and wife, as an example, in, yep. in a standard arrangement. The death of the survivor, there's potentially 17% tax when that money comes out of the superannuation fund
right.
that a lot of people don't know about as well. And that's, mm-hmm. again, there's intertwined strategies between yep. Division 296, equalising member balances and this other death tax that might come into it as well.
Yeah, excellent. So it's not a simple thing for you to do yourself.
No.
This is not a DIY option.
No, and if you've got a self-managed super fund, there's so many elements to it that you need to be across, like this death tax, Division 296, there's another tax, Division 293, that we haven't spoken about
mm-hmm.
on high-income earners. And also then what happens on death or incapacitation and making sure you've got all the right things in place within your super fund, such as death benefit nominations, et cetera,
yep.
to ensure that the money goes to the right people in the right way
mm-hmm.
with the lowest amount of tax payable.
Sounds like there is a whole series on self-managed superannuation and superannuation that we could do as part of Plant Grow Reap.
Yep.
Once you're in the system, are you in it or are you going to fluctuate between
yes,
if you go
correct.
Up and down?
Another anomaly yep. with the legislation. Mm-hmm. So it's all based on your balance at the end of the year.
Yep, okay.
So you might be in the system and being paying Division mm-hmm. 296 tax and then yep. 1 year because you're in pension phase, you've withdrawn money and you've gone below the threshold,
mm-hmm.
then you're out of the system.
Yep, okay.
Yep. And then next year, if there's good capital growth on mm-hmm. on your investments within super,
yep.
then you might be back in the system again.
Yep.
So it's all based on that balance at 30 June each year. As a yes or no if you're in the system or not.
Yeah, okay. So it's not a set and forget thing.
No, it's not. No, no.
Even more fun.
Absolutely. And the other thing about that, which is interesting too, is because you might be in the system for a long time. And remember, and I should go back to superannuation, what the purpose of superannuation is.
Yep, that was my next question.
Yes. Oh, sorry, I've jumped in.
No, please jump in.
So the key thing, look, let's talk about the why this is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to be political on this.
Yes, you are. a little bit political.
I'm going to try and be... Yep. pragmatic about it though. So superannuation, there's what's called the sole purpose test for superannuation.
Mm-hmm.
And superannuation, the sole purpose test in layman's terms is that you should be utilising superannuation to provide for your retirement
yeah.
or to pay out death benefits on your death.
Mm-hmm.
It's not this is a wealth creation vehicle that you want to accumulate and then pass down from one generation to the next to mm-hmm. the next to the next.
Yep. And well, that's not what it was intended.
No, not what
the
it was
original
intended.
People
correct.
Who wrote the bill intended correct. It to be the ability for people to self-fund their retirement.
That's correct.
And not rely on
the government,
aged care.
Age pensions and
pensions
things like that,
and
correct.
Yep.
So, but it's turned into a wealth
mm-hmm.
generation vehicle
yep.
because of the low tax rates
mm-hmm.
And also then a generational wealth mm-hmm. creation vehicle where
yep.
assets just pass on from one generation mm-hmm. to the next. So the government's logic in why they're bringing this in is because they think $3 million is a reasonable cap for you to live comfortably in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Anything above that,
and
it's probably excess
a
to
reminder,
your
$3 million per person in
correct.
The fund. So if you're husband and wife, $6 million that you have to live on after retirement age is 65?
Yes.
Yeah, so
yes.
$6 million.
So they're deeming that that's sufficient yeah. for you to be able to provide for your retirement
mm-hmm.
and therefore anything above that is seen to be excessive,
yeah,
and therefore they think that there should be a tax imposed, yeah, on that. Yeah. And also because, too, when you're in superannuation pension phase, as of today, again, 1st of July, and sorry to keep emphasising the date because this might be a bit later on
it won't be published today.
But the transfer balance cap, which is the balance that you can start a pension on, is $2 million
mm-hmm.
as of today, yep, as of 1st of July 25. And what that means is the earnings on that portion of your fund is tax-free.
Okay.
So superannuation is a very low tax vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of strategies are designed about getting money into superannuation.
Yep.
Because it is a low tax vehicle, and then as you reinvest that, you're not losing as much in tax, which means you're mm-hmm. getting the benefits of reinvesting and creating additional wealth because of the low tax rate.
Yep.
So the government has said, look, $3 million we think is enough per member.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore anything above that we think is excessive,
yep,
and therefore we should be getting our tax take on that.
Yep. Yep.
So that's the logic behind it. As I said, the fundamental issue about taxing unrealised gains, don't agree with that. I think I'm not going to go into what they are, but there's other things they could have done, I believe,
mm,
that could have been a much better and effective tool to do this than what they've done.
Yep. 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 I think regardless of whether you or I agree or disagree, the legislation is going to pass. I think we saw a political situation recently where, you know, it was the now government went to the election with this as one of their policies, and so they really do have a mandate to bring this in, and so it's going to happen. It'll just be the fine print as to,
yep,
you know, how things may or may not
go through. That's what we're assuming.
Yeah.
We're assuming that's going to be the case.
Yep.
You never know when it gets to the Senate though,
yes,
whether there's some egos or otherwise
that
might change it.
Yeah.
But, you know, our understanding is that there's enough support from both the government and the Greens, mm-hmm, to get this through, although the Greens were wanting to lower the cap to $2 million and then index it. But my understanding, but don't hold me to this. So
I think my understanding as well is that
They're not going to get in the way of it.
So you didn't answer my question about timeframes.
Sorry.
Around when people should, because obviously the people who are listening to this podcast are going to be people who are potentially impacted. So I can't imagine that somebody who doesn't have any money in superannuation is going to be interested in listening. So if you think you may be at the almost near the threshold, or you want to have a conversation with somebody about it, what is your recommendation about those conversations? Do you find yourself a financial advisor or accountant? Most accountants can't give you financial advice relating to this. So, you know, do you wait until, you know, it's going to be an issue, or do you talk about it as a strategy going forward?
Yeah, look, I always say the latter, that you should talk about it sooner rather than later, mm-hmm, as a strategy on how you can minimise your tax and the impact of this.
Yep.
It depends on how worried about it you are.
Yeah.
Some people might say, don't care.
It doesn't matter, yeah.
Don't care.
Yeah.
But if you're generally worried about it, or it's, you know, causing you concern, then you should be seeking access to both a financial advisor, but probably I would say, again, accountant / tax advisor first, because it's a tax that we're talking about first. Mm. But then if that means that we work out that there's some issues about liquidity or otherwise, that's when the financial advisor will come in, and that's when we have to look at changing your investment strategy.
Yeah. So have a chat with your accountant in the first instance. Don't wait until September or October or November to have those conversations, because if you need to see a financial advisor, then that's going to be a longer process, right? You don't want to run into a financial advisor you're not going to get a financial plan from them in, you know, 6 weeks. You have to,
there's a process.
It is a strategy.
Yep. Yep.
So have a chat with your accountant in the first instance. Please also just be aware that this is really complex, so it's not something that a lot of accountants are across at this point. And I'm saying that sitting across from someone who is across it, but there are a lot of accountants out there who are not across the very finer details of this. So please just be careful who you seek advice from, make sure that they are your trusted advisor, because we are talking about a significant amount of money that could go wrong if it's not dealt with in the right way. So recommendation, see someone, see your accountant.
Yes.
And now is, depending on your accountant, now is a pretty decent time. July and August are reasonably quiet for accountants. So get in to see your accountant as soon as you can. They'll they should be able to sit there with you with a spreadsheet that will calculate some of this detail for you so that you'll have an idea. I know that's what Shane does, and my eyes glaze over because numbers are not my thing. But get and see Shane if you need to come and see him. He can give you some advice, not necessarily specific advice unless you're engaged, because you know, it's TASA Tuesday also for those of you. Yeah, I know. Now I'm going to have to talk about it. So the government also recently brought in legislation that requires tax agents to fully engage with a client before they actually become a client of ours. So we can't just give you advice generally. We do need to engage with you if you're after that advice, but we can certainly do that in this situation, even if you are not a client of ours. We can help you out with this superannuation information, and we can certainly give you more general advice regardless. So thank you today, Shane. It is there are normally spreadsheets involved in this conversation, and there's a lot of slides. We do have some client events that we are hosting with regard to this, and no doubt we will continue to do them as we go along, because even though we've already had one and we have one coming up, I won't give the date because my amazing team will put the date no doubt if this podcast goes out before, but we will have more of those events because they've been good for people to come in. So if you're interested in one of those events, please be in touch with us as well. Thank you for coming in today. Thank you for talking to us about something that is pretty impactful but hard to digest as well. Mm. So and thanks for joining us today, listeners, on Plant, Grow, Reap. See you next time.